The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Amit Majumdar. He joins us by telephone from somewhere in central Ohio. Where are you, Columbus?
I do live in Columbus, but right now I'm actually visiting at my parents' house up in Cleveland.
All right, Cleveland. Excellent.
Right.
Well, Cleveland rocks, as you probably know.
It does. It does. It absolutely does.
Amit, I have a press release here that was sent out in December from the office of Governor Kasich, announcing that you've been named Ohio's Poet Laureate. That is pretty cool. How did this happen?
You know, they just sent out a call for, nominations for the laureateship because Ohio is one of the last states to pass legislation establishing the laureateship. And, a friend of mine who's familiar with my work sent me an email and said, hey, you know, you should apply to this. And, you know, self-nominations were allowed, so I self-nominated. You just sent in a selection of your work, a little essay about what you wanted to do with the laureateship, what your vision for it was. And they whittled it down to about three finalists, of which I was one. And then I had an interview, and they decided that I was the one. I was very honored.
Impressive. And we've never had a laureate in Ohio until now?
That's right. I'm the first.
And you get to be the laureate all year?
For the next 2 years, actually.
Do they give you, like, a wreath of olive leaves? I mean, how do they mark that? They give you a trophy?
No, there's no trophy. There's no laurel wreath. There's the title. I think you do it for the you don't do it for the title either. I think you do it for the art and for the people of Ohio. So that's why I'm doing it. And, you know, it's not necessarily something tangible that I'm after. I'm out to improve the public's relationship with the art and represent the art to the best of my ability.
Amit Majumdar joins us. And I understand that last night you did a reading at the Market Garden Brewery in Cleveland from your new collection of poems, Dothead. How did that go?
It went well. I think it went well. We sold a lot of books. I think people enjoyed themselves. So, I was very pleased with how it went.
I love this title, Dothead. Very provocative.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Tell us about it.
Oh, well, it's the title of the title poem of the book, and that kind of relates to a racial slur against Indian Americans that kind of came about roughly the time that my parents came to this country back in the 70s. That poem is basically about the dot that is worn by Indian Hindu women on their foreheads and how, you know, that is the subject of a racial slur, but for me it has a very poignant, personal, sort of evocative aspect to it, you know, as far as my own mother is concerned. And it also has a strong religious, you know, significance. And in the poem I kind of bring out those aspects of it and kind of take that term back.
Are you up for reading some of your poems, like maybe
sure,
that one?
Sure, I'd be honored. Would you like me to read Dothead?
I would love that.
Okay. So this is the first poem in the book. It's the title poem of the book. It's called Dothead. Well, yes, I said. My mother wears a dot. I know they said third eye in class, but it's not an eye. Not like that. It's not some freak third eye that opens on your forehead like on some Chernobyl baby. What it means is, what it's showing is, there's this unseen eye on the inside, and she's marking it. It's how the X that says where treasure's at is not the treasure, but as good as treasure. All right. What I said wasn't half so measured. In fact, I didn't say a thing. Their laughter had made my mouth go dry. Lunch was after world history. That week was India. Myths, caste system, sati, all the greatest hits. The white kids I was sitting with were friends, at least as I defined a friend back then. So wait, said Nick. Does your mom wear a dot? I nodded, and I caught a smirk on Todd. She wore it to the shower and to bed? While Jesse sucked his chocolate milk and Brad was getting ready for another stab, I said, hand me that ketchup packet there. And Nick said, what? I snatched it, twitched the tear, and squeezed a dollop on my thumb and worked circles till the red planet entered the House of War. And on my forehead, for the world to see, my third eye burned those schoolboys in their seats, their flesh in little puddles underneath, pale pools where Nataraja cooled his feet. And Nataraja, I should mention, is the Hindu god of destruction who awakens at the end of time and dances the dance of universal destruction in a sphere of fire. So that's the mythological reference in the final line of the poem.
Very powerful. I love the ending.
Thank you.
I see you got a review the other day in the New York Times. Were you tickled? Were you walking on cloud nine?
Oh, yeah. You know, that was it's a big deal to to kind of show up on the radar of the New York Times Book Review. And, I published a few books before in the past, a couple of novels, a couple of books of poetry. And I'd kind of flown under their radar, but this time I showed up as a blip, and I was very, very happy.
My guest is Amit Majmudar. His new collection of poems is Dothead, published by the distinguished publisher Alfred Knopf. I really enjoyed this collection. You're clearly someone who is a bit of an old-school Renaissance man. Some of your poems actually rhyme, and you have these wonderful literary references that show that you are steeped in the classics. I think that Harold Bloom might even approve.
Wow, yeah. I'd love it if he got a hold of the book. I'd like to know what he thought.
We've had him on the show a couple times. I think he's the only person who's ever addressed me as darling on the program.
If you want me to do that, I'm more than happy to.
That's okay. Now, if you were Zsa Zsa Gabor, I would accept.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. I see that you have written some novels, and I'm wondering what those were about.
I tend to jump around both as a poet and as a novelist. So my first novel was a piece of historical fiction that took place in 1947 in the Indian subcontinent, and it dealt with the partition of India and how it affected the people on the ground, women, untouchables, children, the elderly. And that's kind of the general topic of that book. The second book had a more contemporary setting, and it talked about, it was actually from the perspective of an aging grandmother who doesn't have much time left, and it was very much about her relationship with her family and with her daughter in particular.
I think I read the most poetry when I was a teenager. For some reason, it really spoke to me, and I had a couple of favorite poets at the time. One was Dylan Thomas, who's still a favorite of mine. And the other was a guy named Arthur Rimbaud, who was a Frenchman who wrote most of his poetry as a teenager and then just essentially stopped. And I love the fact that you have a poem that seems to visualize his post-poet life. That's one
right.
of my favorites.
He was a gun runner in Africa, actually.
Right. I love that.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite poems in the book.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
How do you get the idea for a poem? Where does it come from?
You know, for me, it could be basically anything, and I don't have a single sort of system where this is what happens, I think of this, and then I write it. The poem about Rimbaud probably came from some memory of having read his biography, a long time earlier, and then just kind of thinking about him and thinking to myself, what would that be like, to be a gun runner in Africa after having written some of the most revolutionary poems in the French language. Then other poems, so there's one poem in the book called Save the Candor, which was actually triggered by a Wikipedia article where I was reading about the California condor, and there was a typo where instead of condor, they had an A instead of the O. And I thought, wouldn't that be interesting if candor were considered as an endangered species of bird, right? So very, very, almost trivial triggers that I'm not even fully aware of. Sometimes I'll just get a metrical feeling. So there's poems in there in weird meters like trochaic dimeter. And there'll just be this something in me that says, I kind of need to, I'm feeling trochaic diameter right now. I kind of have to compose, almost musically, I'm composing in trochaic diameter. And then the thoughts, the words, the images, they sort of come to the meter, as it were. And that's very difficult for me to even express in prose or describe in prose, but that is another way in which poems are triggered.
I really like that Candor poem, too. Could you read another poem for us?
Sure. Do you have any? Would you like me to read the Rimbaud one? Or
Either the Rimbaud or the Candor, any one you want. Do you have a favorite that you love to read?
I probably do like to read the Candor one because it's so phonetically awake, you know?
Let's do it. I read that one out loud to myself last night.
There's a lot of poems in here, I think, that readers might like to read aloud to themselves just because that's what they're designed for. They're kind of designed to be, you know, just enjoyed out loud. That's why the epigraph is from Dr. Seuss. You know, Dr. Seuss is designed to be read out loud as well. So this is called Save the Candor.
Okay.
Every tripod-toting birder knows it never nests on urban girders. Even fences set its scalded crimson head askew, its wattle swinging, wings akimbo. Few have got it on their lists, and fewer still have caught it singing. This endangered North American candor, cousin of the Dunnan dodo, big-eyed, big-sore tremor tenor, only 10 or 20 hang glide over Modoc County, humbly numbered as their days are. For us crazy crown and throat and belly gazers, any niche as fragile as a candor's renders its extinction certain. We can sabotage its habitat with half a laugh or quarter murmur, fluster coveys worth of candors off their branches, which, abandoned, soon are little more than snarking grounds for minor birds, the common snipe, the yellow-bellied bittern.
Amit Majmudar, reading from his new collection of poetry, Dothead. I have to think that were he around to hear that, Ogden Nash would approve of that poem.
I would hope so. I would hope so.
Who are some of the poets that you enjoy reading?
You know, I'm pretty eclectic, and I enjoy reading, you know, across cultures, across time periods. You know, I really like, obviously I like Shakespeare, but I think everyone likes Shakespeare for the most part. I don't think that really says anything about me as a reader. But Shakespeare is definitely central to me, and whenever I feel like, you know, I'm not firing on all cylinders, I just have to kind of go back to that well, and I just have to kind of, I just read a little Shakespeare and everything gets quick and tightened up again, the rigging tightens up. But, you know, I like Byron, I like Ludovico Ariosto, who's this 16th century chivalric Italian poet who wrote chivalric romance called Orlando Furioso. I like Ovid, who wrote Metamorphoses. He's a Latin poet from back in the day. You know, I like all sorts of things, and there's really not any, you know, single one or two poets that I can single out too well. In every language, there's a poet or two that I just really love. You know, Rimbaud is one of them too. I think he's one of the few prodigies in the history of poetry, really, because what he accomplished in his teens, it really is genuine poetry, and it's kind of light years ahead of what is usually produced at that age by poets. So he's one of them. I'm with you on him. You know, I read a lot of T.S. Eliot, and you know, I like K. Ryan a lot among living poets. So yeah, I'm all kind of all over the place.
Just last night at dinner, I had the pleasure of hearing some of Eliot's four quartets. My dinner companion started reciting, and I was like, "Wow, this is even better than food."
Wow, I know. I'd like to have been there.
The book is Dothead. Amit Majmudar wrote it. It's his collection of poetry, just published by Knopf. He joins us on the program today. And he's up in Cleveland where he's visiting his family and also doing some events. And I see you're going to be back in your home turf. You're going to be in Bexley on Wednesday, April 20th at the Bexley Public Library doing a reading at 7 o'clock. We do have listeners that go up to Columbus quite a bit. Also on Thursday, April 21st, we have an event at the Arlington Public Library in Upper Arlington, and that is at 7 o'clock. And we've also got the Ohioana Book Festival coming up in Columbus on Saturday, April 23rd, and you're going to be there, too, along with a lot of other authors. Lots of stuff going on.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a busy month. I think, you know, National Poetry Month is usually pretty booked, and I'm booked solid for this month.
Amit, I guess we should probably tell our listeners that you don't just sit in your garret, your lonely garret, writing poetry all day. You have a day job that probably keeps you fairly busy.
Yeah, I'm a nuclear radiologist in Columbus, and yeah, I work full time, you know, and that's my day job, and that's what I do to kind of be my own patron, as it were. And so it has its time commitment for sure, but at the same time, frees me up to write whatever I like, and you know, not to have to necessarily do a song and dance for any particular audience or try and, you know, please any particular patron. I can just do what I do, and I like that kind of freedom.
I know what a poet does, or at least I think I do, but I have no clue what a nuclear radiologist would do. What do you do?
So I'm an MD, and basically a radiologist is someone, you know, whenever you go into the hospital and you get an X-ray or a CT scan or an ultrasound or any type of imaging, that's what the radiologist reads. And I read all of those types of studies. Then I'm subspecialized in what's called nuclear radiology, and that's just a subtype of radiology that involves injecting patients with radioactive isotopes and then creating images from the distributions of that isotope, it just requires an additional year to read properly. So basically, whenever you if you get an X-ray or a CT scan, there's always some guy in a dark office somewhere who's looking at that, at those images, and coming to a conclusion about whether it's normal or abnormal, and if it's abnormal, how it's abnormal. And I'm that guy.
Is this the sort of position where you're affiliated with a particular hospital?
Right. The Mount Carmel Health System is the one in Columbus that my group is affiliated with. It's you know, Mount Carmel East, Mount Carmel West, St. Mm-hmm. Anne's. Those are the hospitals where, you know, I usually am.
I'm guessing that poetry was something you've been doing for a long time, but how did you decide, I want to be a nuclear radiologist? When did that happen?
You know, it's kind of like I have like a dual life kind of, and so, you know, in my family growing up, basically both my parents are doctors. I have one sister. She's a doctor. She's married to a doctor. So it's kind of the family profession. And so I just kind of, it just seemed like what people did with their lives when I was growing up. And I had a knack for it. I had a knack for, you know, the sciences and everything. And so I was able to go into that and do that. But at that time, I was already really, really deeply into literature, and I didn't necessarily want to make a living out of that. I kind of liked having it be just this special thing that I had hidden away from the whole world. And I've been able to manage that kind of dual life the whole time, even through medical school and residency and fellowship. And so I really didn't have to make any sacrifices, I think, except I sacrificed sleep, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to do both, and I'm very happy that I was able to do both.
So poetry is really the cream on the coffee.
Right. And it's the sort of treasure that's hidden away, you know? And it's always been like that for me, and I've basically, you know, there's not a day goes by without me thinking about it, without me thinking about literature in some way or another.
Amit Majmudar joins us. His new collection of poetry is called Dothead, and he is the reigning poet laureate of Ohio, our first one named at the beginning of this year, and he'll have a 2-year term. Did you actually go to the capital there and meet with the governor? Was there any kind of a ceremony or anything?
You know, we're actually in the process of putting that together. As you know, Governor Kasich is on the campaign trail, kind of locked in this, the Republican, the race for the Republican nomination. So naturally, he doesn't have much time to be, back here, hanging out with the poet laureate. So whenever that's quiets down, I think he may circle back, and I look forward to meeting him and thanking him for giving me this opportunity.
Oh, man, you opened the door to politics. That, Amit, how could you do that? We're talking about poetry. Poetry is so beautiful, and politics in our country right now is so ugly, and they all want our governor to drop out. I understand you're not a big fan of Donald Trump.
No, not really. I mean, most people I know aren't, and I think that's increasingly the case. But, you know, we'll see how things play out. I think that even if he does get the nomination, which is a possibility, I don't necessarily think that he has what it takes to win the national election as of now.
Well, as we're recording this, Trump just lost the Wisconsin primary to Ted Cruz.
That's right.
This is very interesting. No matter how horrific and polarizing this process is, it's certainly interesting to observe.
That's right. That's I guess, the only positive aspect of it. I think the negative aspects drastically outweigh that.
True. Amit, do you have another poem you would share with our listeners? I'm sure they're all saying, enough with the chit-chat. Let's get to the meat.
Sure. Let us read. Oh, can you think of anything in particular that you'd like me to read?
Well, we could do the alphabet one, but that would take us about 2 hours, wouldn't it?
It would. It's a pretty long one.
Just pick one out. Pick one you like to read.
Sure. Let me read you. Let me read you one that I haven't read on the radio before.
Okay.
I'll read you To the Hyphenated Poets. And so we're talking about being a poet and, you know, being Indian, being American. So I'll read this poem called To the Hyphenated Poets. And it's about being of, you know, two different origins, two different cultures, and making poetry out of that. So To the Hyphenated Poets. Richer than mother's milk is half and half. Friends of two minds, redouble your craft. Our shells are hives, ourselves a royal jelly. May we at Benares and Boston, Philly and Delhi, collect our birthright nectar. No swarm our own, we must be industrious, both queen and drone. Being two beings requires a rage for rigor, rewritable memory, hybrid vigor. English herself is a crossbred mother mutt, primly promiscuous and hot to rut. Oneness, pure chimera. Splendor is spliced. Make your halves into something twice your size. Your tongue a hyphen joining nation to nation. Recombine. Become a thing of your own creation. A many-minded mongrel. The line's renewal. Self-made and twofold. Soul and dual.
Ah, poem that rhymes. How nice.
You're a fan of rhyme, are you?
Oh, I guess that's just what I grew up with. I like a lot of different kinds of poetry, but the rhymes always take me back to.
Yeah, it's a form of delight, I think.
It
brings delight to the poem, brings fun to the poem. And in many cases, it just brings a certain stylistic panache to the poem. And I write a lot in rhyme. And I think I would probably like more poems if more poems were written with it.
And I'm a big fan of alliteration. So when you have lines like mother mutt, primly promiscuous.
Yes, I love alliteration as well. You know, alliteration is actually at the foundation of you know, English language poetry. So if you go back to the Anglo-Saxons, which is some of this, you know, brilliant poetry, it was all based on alliteration. And that was like the primary, almost the central anchoring technique of their verse. And, you know, rhyme and the way that we write rhyme now kind of came in with the French invasions of Britain. But if you go to the taproot, you know, you go to the very, very roots of the language, you find alliteration. And I think that's why it speaks to something in us. It has a very, very, there's something really attractive, I think, about alliteration. I agree with you.
You also seem to be fond of the letter K, words that start with K. In fact, when we start the book, there's a piece of a dictionary. I guess it's a dictionary where you have some K words. What's this all about?
Oh, so if you notice that, well, actually, what you're referring to is a facsimile of a page from what's called Hobson Jobson, which is an Anglo-Indian dictionary. When the British were in India, they collected all of the Indian words that had entered the English language from various Indian languages.
Hmm.
And because, you know, they were there for a couple hundred years. And the reason that the K page is there is because of the word kedgeree, which is a kind of like a mix of all sorts of stuff in this one big, you could think of it almost as a jambalaya or some stew, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which has a whole bunch of stuff in it. And instead of table of contents, you know, I have the table of contents headed with the words kedgeree ingredients. So my poems are kind of like a mix of all, you know, all sorts of things. And so I kind of regard Dothead, the book, as a kedgeree of all, as a kedgeree or kedgeree of all sorts of different poems. And so in the dictionary entry for kedgeree, it ends with the sentence, you know, they're giving an example of how you use the word kedgeree, and it says, "Here is a great plenty of what they call kedgeree, a mixture of altogether, or refuse of rough, yellow, and unequal, which they sell by bushels to the Russians."
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just kind of funny and yet weirdly appropriate.
And you have a couple of K poems. You've got Kill Shot and the Kennewick poem. Now, who was the Kennewick man? Was this someone that they found?
Oh, he was a man who was
unearthed. Frozen, or?
Yeah. If you Google him, you'll see that he was someone who was unearthed from almost like a riverbank. He was a primordial or prehistoric man.
Oh, yeah.
And Smithsonian Magazine ran in this whole article about the discovery of the Kennewick man. And Billy Collins, who was editing the Smithsonian for Poetry, at that time, you know, I actually emailed him and asked him, "Hey, do you guys have any interesting articles coming up?" And, you know, there was the mention of the Kennewick man. And so I actually composed that poem for that Smithsonian article, and it ran together in Smithsonian's magazine.
Neat. Well, you're only the second laureate we've had on the show. The other was that guy, Billy Collins, you just mentioned.
Oh, wow.
It was a long time
ago.
I'm
in great company, aren't I?
And when I saw your reference to kedgeree, I immediately flashed on Amitav Ghosh and his wonderful trilogy that he just finished last year. Have you read any of those books?
I have not, but they're definitely on my list.
Oh, he's got all that great language and all these words that came from those cultures over there on the subcontinent of India, words like pajamas. I mean, we have
right.
all these words in our language that came from India.
Bandana.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one.
Lots of them. Well, this is a wonderful collection, and we really appreciate you taking a moment out of your busy day to talk to us about it, Amit.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
The book is Dothead. It's a collection of poems, and Amit Majumdar wrote them, and he is our current Ohio Poet Laureate out of Central Ohio. Do you live in Dublin?
I live in Dublin, that's
okay.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Amit.
Thank you very much, sir.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO for The Book Nook. I'm Vic McKeon.